On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, so on this episode of the podcast, we're having another group chat. I'm going to have the guys introduce themselves quickly, and then we'll just hop right in. So, Travis, we'll start with you, and then we'll go Logan and Danny, and we'll go from there.
Travis Robertson, this is my second year in pro ball, both with the Indians. This year, I'll be in our AAA affiliate in Columbus.
Logan Jones, this is my third season with the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'll be in the low A Midwest League, if we ever play the season, with the Kane County Cougars. Prior to my job here with the D-backs, I did a couple of internships in the collegiate level that kind of funneled me into where I am now.
And then Danny Escobar, minor league strength conditioning coordinator for the Los Angeles Angels. This would be my sixth year with the team.
Perfect. And so today we're going to discuss recovery, primarily in season. We might sneak a little bit of off-season stuff in, but I just kind of want to start off with just everybody's thoughts on the importance of recovery in season. We play a lot of games. We do a lot of traveling. So I'm assuming it's pretty important in everybody's books, but I just want to hear from you guys, your thoughts on recovery in general. And then we'll kind of dive into some deeper rabbit holes from there.
First of all, I think it's very important. I think we all can agree on in that regard. I do think that there are some non-negotiables as part kind of that play a big role in recovery all the time, but especially in season when we're asked to play on a daily basis, those being sleep, hydration, and nutrition. For me and what we do with the Arizona Diamondbacks, those are the three most significant, I guess, that we like to have some kind of control over. I think education is a big piece of it. So taking the time to build those relationships with our guys and feeding them the information that maybe they don't have or they don't understand. And I think as performance coaches, our first job is to just do no harm. And I think we're ultimately stress managers. And sometimes that means structuring our lifts, our conditioning, mobility, whatever it may be, in a way where we can, you know, prioritize recovery and try to add more gas to the tank, if you will. And I think just having a persistent positive attitude on our end, focused on education and creating a self-sustainment on our end is crucial, because it can be a grind to be a continuous source of goodness for those guys. So I think if we can prioritize it on our end first, they will take after our lead and see the importance of all of these variables that we're trying to introduce.
To kind of go off of that, 100% agree when it comes to the big three, nutrition, hydration, and sleep. Those are, you know, low hanging fruit in a lot of aspects. But then they can have the biggest and the most measurable effects as well. The biggest thing in the time that I've been in pro baseball and from being in the rookie level, and then also seeing it like in the upper levels as well, is that like it's really relative. You know, recovery is based on that athlete's physicality, you know, mental processing, and also like his like where they're at in terms of like a positive state of mind or anything. And their work and load capacities and their physical abilities. You know, a guy who we've come to found, like a guy who has a low training age, has incredibly like terrible lifestyle habits, is gonna need more recovery than the person, you know, who has built up his capacities to a high level, and is you know, on top of just their mental health. And so like that's gonna be the biggest thing that we've found, like, prioritize as well with the big three, is just going to be like building up those capacities, making these guys as resilient as possible when it comes to what they put themselves both physically and also psychologically.
No, I agree with both of you guys. You know, recovery modalities can be just as important as the training we do in season, you know, being able to adjust on the fly based off the individual. You know, as Logan mentioned, I think like having the relationship with the players, you know, as we both know, there are those guys who really don't want to tell you when things are going wrong, you know, that it affect their playing time. And I think having that relationship so they'll actually tell you when things are going wrong. And plus, I think that will lead into, you know, situation of sometimes the stuff they're doing in the AT room just isn't working for that individual. And they'll come up to you and be like, hey, what do you got for me? You know, and taking advantage of that opportunity to show that guy, because I think it's all individualized based when it comes to the recovery. You know, one thing's going to work for one guy and something's going to work for another. But, you know, like in the lower levels, opening those doors and giving those guys different ideas of what may work for them. You know, and we had mentioned like the big three, you know, we're the same, you know, sleep, hydration, nutrition are three keys and stuff. And for us, at least with our daily wellnesses, those are main focuses for us on our daily reports kind of hit on. And luckily we get those early enough, you know, we can touch on those when guys get to the park.
Yeah. So it seems like we're all in agreement. And I'm on the same boat as well with the sleep, hydration, nutrition. Stress management is a big one for me. Danny, you had touched on that, mental health, and just how much capacity guys actually have coming into a season is going to determine their ability to recover. So I know we're talking in season specifically, but off-season wise, the better an off-season is for a guy, the better his capabilities will be when he gets to the affiliate to be able to recover from the workload. The workload is a ton, more so in terms of the travel, the schedule, the games, not necessarily the work that they do on the field. Sometimes you don't have any batting practice. Sometimes you don't have any defense. Sometimes you do. But having that motor and those abilities ahead of time does help with recovery in those aspects. And then kind of digging in a little bit deeper on that, are there any specific interventions that you guys have seen work firsthand, whether it's sleep recommendations or hydration recommendations, nutrition, anything that you guys have seen specifically work for yourselves, or you've heard other people, or you've read something that says like, yes, this is actually something that's going to help your athletes with those big three?
For us, first and foremost, it's been just making these guys aware of it. You know, you guys deal with it obviously as well as we do, where you're going to have athletes coming from whatever situation is going on in Venezuela right now, to guys that came from a Power Five program and had a lot of things available to them. And so some of these guys have an understanding of it, but maybe just need some tweaks here and there to refine what they do. Where some guys, it's just they're very comfortable with their lifestyle factors, even though I don't think the layperson with very minimal activity would be able to recover from what, like the way that they go about their business. So just making them aware of like the importance and how much of a factor those big three things has been huge for us, of just educating them in terms of, you know, what residuals are, educating them in terms of why hydration is important, and the recovery that comes naturally when they're going into their sleep cycles. Like, that's been the biggest thing that we push onto them. And then aside from that, is also like trying to find ways for them to maximize recovery with minimal equipment. You know, not everybody's gonna have the same things available to them both in season and in the off season. Personally, I found like it works best to try to push guys into some type of activity. Whether if it's a comfort thing, whether if it's just an availability thing, or if they didn't feel they got much out of it, then it'll be like some type of equipment or tech. Just because like it's a twofold thing. The more active you make them, then the more they realize how much of how much of a factor that'll play into just their physical abilities. And then you can also show them, you know, what kind of just basic lifestyle changes, such as going outside, being in the sun, you know, having to hydrate from like a hike and things like that, like how much of an effect that can have on their performance as well.
Yeah, I 100% agree, Danny. I think the biggest piece is the education piece and just feeding them and providing resources for them to use, and kind of take it where they may under our guidance. And I think from there, maybe any interventions that we decide to do that we feel may benefit them or a group of them or our team as a whole, whatever it may be, I think all those things are important. But it starts with the education piece, no doubt.
No, you guys kind of hit on it both, you know, the education, especially at the younger level, you know, when you get guys of just educating them what they have available to them. You know, I think a lot of guys, you know, I ran into, they're like, oh shit, I didn't know we had that. Well, you know, we've educated you five times on it. You just haven't taken advantage. And it seems like a lot of guys, when things are really bad, that's when they're really open to new ideas, you know, with the stubborn guys. And I think Danny hit on like getting guys outside and get them moving is a great idea. You know, we've done it before, you know, you get to a ballpark after a road trip, just doing a voluntarily mobility circuit out on the grass with no shoes on, you know, especially the age we live in now, guys just want to be on their phones or playing video games all the time, and actually getting them outside barefoot, you know, a lot of guys kind of fell in love. And that's just one thing we did this year that seemed to work in educating our guys. And it was real general, nothing specific, just to kind of give them ideas of some mobility, some stability drills that they liked and worked for them. And, you know, one challenge I think, you know, we've all seen is space availability, you know, on the road. You know, you don't have the biggest clubhouses to work in, and limited staff sometimes can be a hard part too. With affiliates, is you just have one strength coach and one AT for a whole group of guys. So, you know, AT room's filled and guys can't get stretched or tissue work, you know, sometimes that's going to fall on the strength coach as well.
Yeah, getting outside has been enormous. I've actually heard from some other organizations that after like a certain amount of hours on a bus, they have a mandatory movement session the next day. So it's, say you have a 5-hour bus ride, the next day there's a mandatory movement session outside, which I think is tremendous. We've talked about this on the podcast before and even off of it. Like, I have a home gym in my backyard, and for me, the biggest part of that is like being outside is just awesome. Instead of sitting in the living room on my phone, or even being inside a gym and lifting, like just getting outside and moving around just does something for me personally. And I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it works for me. Things that I've seen and read, this offseason, I read an article about sleep, and it was some of the things that are a little bit outside of the, you know, the norm of 8 hours of sleep every night, sleep in a dark room, you know, sleep in a relatively cold room, all that stuff that we kind of know. But one of the things it was talking about was associating a scent with sleep. So when you go into like a hotel, you might have like those lavender packets or whatever. And part of that is the scent. So like, if you hear a song, you associate it with something from your past. If you smell like the smell of pizza, you associate it with having a good meal or something, whatever it is. And this article was saying, if you associate smells with a sleep, you can actually train your brain that when you smell this certain smell, it's time to shut it down and go to sleep. And so they were saying, don't use, you know, something that you smell all the time at work, because you might start getting drowsy or whatever. But if there's a scent that's kind of out of your norm, like a lavender, for instance, if you can have that in your room, by the time you get home from the ballpark and you go to bed and you smell that, it actually will trigger your brain to, okay, it's time to shut it down and go to sleep. So I haven't used it yet for myself. And I try to do things for myself before I push it on our athletes. But it's definitely something that I've thought was interesting, and it made sense to me in terms of like mental associations with certain things. So that could be something that you guys take. Maybe it's as crazy as it sounds, I don't know. But any way that we can get athletes to fall asleep faster is a win in my book. One of the big things that I learned in AAA this past season was the relievers are a whole different ball game. And those guys come into high leverage situations late in the game. They've usually had caffeine before the game and right before they pitch. And they are juiced up. And then if they get out of a tight situation and the adrenaline's pumping, or they give it up and they're frustrated, they have trouble falling asleep. So their sleep schedule typically starts at, some of them, 2-3 in the morning, and they sleep until 11 or 12. And then they come to the ballpark, and their first meal isn't until pregame meal, which is, depending on where you're at, 3, 4, even 5 o'clock some places. And so for me, our role in this, specifically in stress management, is like there's a daily thing that you can do for guys to help them get ready for that day. And there's a long-term education piece, like you guys mentioned. So how do I get you ready to be at your best today? Might not be the most ideal for a long-term thing, but I can use this situation to educate you. So it comes back down to the education. Traps, you mentioned it. Sometimes you harp on it with guys 5, 6, 7 times and they don't get it until something goes wrong for them. And then they're more willing to listen to you. And they're like, oh shit, this guy's been telling me this for 4 weeks. And now it finally clicks for me. Like, I probably should start using this in my routine.
I 100% agree. I think it's crucial to see the big picture and realize that not everyone comes from the same place. You do have to meet people where they are, and then building that relationship is the foundation for all of this.
Chris, it's funny you mentioned the lavender smell. I actually got to listen to our major league sleep doctor give a little presentation this spring training, and he brought up that too, of you can use lavender, like sprayed on your hotel pillow and stuff, and associated with sleep. So it's funny that you brought that up. Have you tried it yet?
I haven't, no. I actually just noticed the other day that my wife has something on her nightstand that says something lavender. I try to stay away from her nightstand because whatever she has over there and whatever I have on mine is different sides. But I noticed it, and I've been meaning to ask her about it and see what she's doing. She's always got, like, you know, tricks up her sleeve and, like, life hacks and stuff. Like, it's one of the reasons I really enjoy being around her, is because she's like, hey, have you ever heard of this? And I'm like, no. Like, she was, like, shaving our couch the other day, and she's like, look how smooth the pads are now. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, God, this is kind of dumb, but at the same time, like, these just feel so much more smooth and the couch just looks so much nicer. So I'm like, I have to admit that she's right. But she has a ton of weird stuff like that, and I don't know, there's little things like that you might get players to buy into things. I don't know, even with hydration, like, for me, as soon as I wake up, my feet hit the floor, I try to drink a bottle of water. Like, I just try to get ahead for the day. And like I said, for me, I try things myself. And then if they work for me, I try to, you know, push them on our athletes gently when it's appropriate. You have to have the proper relationships, like you guys said. But, I mean, I take my lifting very seriously. Travis, we've talked about this on a different podcast episode. And so for me, like, recovery is important for me. So I'm always looking for new things as well that, you know, I can use to help the athletes for sure.
I know one thing you mentioned, Chris, that reminded me is, like, you know, you just said whatever might be the best option for you today might not be the best thing in terms of, like, something that they can maintain throughout. Like, I took that as, like, throughout a season or maybe throughout a career. I think, like, so when Robin Thorpe was with Manchester United, he was kind of conducting a study with monitoring fatigue and recovery with the soccer guys there. One thing that he talked about is that, like, they applied modalities based off of, like, the ratings of the big three. So, like, obviously they pushed those stuff first and prioritized like that with their guys. But anytime that there was a decrease in sleep, that's when they increased the amount, or just like the exposure to the modality, like whatever modalities that they use. And so, like, that's how they went about applying it, is where, like, I think in season, one of the considerations, you guys have all kind of touched on it, is that, like, their main concern, the one thing on their mind, and, like, at the end of the day, like, what makes our careers is how best these guys are performing on the field. And so, like, if we find a way that, like, obviously we're going to push them towards the big three. But when those aren't being met and that guy needs to feel good or find a way to perform that day, it's understanding like the availability and how well these things can work, whether it's some type of technology or a different type of, you know, hands-on technique.
Yeah, I'm there with you, man. Like I said, for me, it was very eye-opening. Like a guy would come to me and be like, hey, I got two kids. They didn't sleep last night. I let my wife sleep and I got 3 hours. How can you help me get ready for the game tonight? And it's like, well, ideally I want you to sleep more at night, but we can't go back to last night and get you more sleep. So how do we get you prepared to play tonight? Right? Like there's a today and then there's a long-term picture. And sometimes you have to weigh those. And you know, sometimes the today outweighs the long-term approach. It's just being honest. Like there are things that we might do today that I wouldn't recommend you do every day for a week, but you know, we need to get you hopped up ready for this game. What can we do? Okay. Now tonight, let's try to get some more sleep, get some more sleep, get some more sleep. So that kind of leads me into my next talking point for us is just, we all know kind of what the ideal recovery looks like, the textbook recovery, the big three, but what challenges does professional baseball present for recovery for these guys? And how do you find that balance between like ideal versus reality with recovery in regards to in-season professional baseball?
I think for all of us, like we're going to have a similar, my guess is that we would have a similar experience depending on what level, what level you're working at, but ideal versus reality, two totally different things. And just some of the variables I think that play into our realm are going to be travel, whether it be long overnight bus trips, changing time zones. Some hotels are better than others. Playing every day, obviously, we're unique in that regard. Morning, afternoon, night games kind of bounces all over the place. Travis, I think you touched on it earlier with the subpar clubhouses, limited space, resources, equipment. Maybe not so much at the AAA level, but no doubt the lower levels, that's an issue. I think, especially at the lower levels, the compliance just with all of these things maybe isn't where it needs to be, especially maybe whether it be a language barrier or just a lack of the educational piece of that puzzle. And then organization to organization, I think budgets kind of play a role into that as well. Like there can be a financial restriction. And then one of you guys also touched on the staff athlete ratio, not ideal. There's, 25 to 30 guys on a squad, depending on if we have any guys on the IL. And then there's one of us along with an athletic trainer. And that presents challenges, in itself. And so I think I'm not sure that there is a great answer to, this is how I find a solution to these issues other than just trying to be creative and look for new ways and to implement, whether it be, given modalities in the training room or movement sessions in the outfield, pre batting practice or whatever it may be. I think just finding a way to change things up and create new environments for these guys to learn, I found to be successful to this point.
I think Logan made a good point of, being creative, in minor league baseball, you got to be creative, especially on the road and stuff, whether it's getting guys outside or, taking a closet in a clubhouse and taking some stuff out of it so guys can take naps and stuff if, they're not sleeping well. Just basically using any resources you have used in the past in any situation and trying to apply them can help, Ideal versus reality, ideal would be we'd only play a couple times a week, not every day. But, it's not the world we live in. And one thing I think, that I found this year was like when you get a guy called up, whether it's from Arizona or a lower affiliate, you got to take that into account, of where he's coming from, what time zone he came from, how long was the flight, and basically what they've been doing for the past couple of days if you don't get that report before you see them. We've all been in the case of a guy shows up and you're like, where did this guy come from? Of taking those things into account and just asking those questions to that player of what they've been doing, what they need from you, and just making changes for that individual too. I've ran in, is, you know, that ideal versus real.
No, I think like, I'm kind of just going to sound like an echo off of what these guys are saying. Like they all hit everything on the head. It's just understanding, like, you know, ideal situations are a light at the end of the tunnel. Like it's always there in the back of your mind. You're always striving towards it, but you're never going to reach it. You know, a lot of these things when it comes to the ideal situations are based off of like, controlled studies where like every single factor is either accounted for or, you know, is in some way being manipulated, when with us, like we're dealing with, you know, at least 27 to 30 guys of N equals one. You have, like, we have to understand that every single situation and that not everything is applicable, to every individual that we have. And so like, you know, just through the years, it's like the people who I've worked under is just understanding like the reality, like what we have to deal with, you know, it's essentially like where we make our money. It's what we get paid to do. It's like, if it was easy, like they would literally just put, any Joe Schmo in our position, and just be like, here, you know, here's the program, follow it. That's all you got to do. And that's that. But like in us ourselves, like educating on like, okay, like these are best practices. But this is the situation we have, and knowing the art of how to apply it, on an individual basis and on a team basis, and finding ways to work best to get the best out of these guys is where we make our money. So.
Yeah. One of the new challenges I had this year was, flying and playing the same night. You don't do that in double A. And that was an interesting thing to have to like deal with, and obviously nowhere near ideal to get up at 4 a.m, hop on a bus, drive an hour to the airport, fly to a city, hop on your connector, fly to the other city, take an hour bus to the hotel, unload at the hotel, and then pop over to the field for pregame stuff. Like nowhere in the textbooks or in the studies does that say that's ideal. But like you said, for us, we make our money in making the adjustments on those kind of days. And we had a situation like that, and then we had a night game, and the next day we had like a 10:30 day game. And it was like, how do you maximize these guys' ability to play in these two games in this window of, we just flew in, played, didn't get any sleep, and then played again, and then we have a bus ride to another city to play again tomorrow. Like all of that factors in for us. And I've said it a million times on the podcast, I wish everybody could be a strength coach in professional baseball, because you find out more than just the X's and O's of strength and conditioning in the weight room. You find out about recovery and nutrition and supplementation, hydration, and how important all that stuff really is when it comes to the grueling schedule that we have to go through. And it's fun. I mean, honestly, that's a major part of our jobs, is being able to manage these guys in these situations. And that's what makes the job fun, is every day you go to the ballpark, you may have a plan, and you may try to stick to that plan. But, you know, one guy comes in and tells you, I slept 3 hours last night, we got to make an adjustment. And it's, how do you adjust your plan for that guy? So it really teaches you to be creative, like you guys said, and be able to adjust on the fly. And if you can get into pro ball and you're not afraid of everything that we've already said on here, I would highly recommend as a strength coach trying to get in and just experiencing it for sure. And then kind of going a little bit deeper, just where do you guys go for continuing ed on recovery? I know, Travis, you said you have a sleep doctor that you've been listening to with you guys. Is there people on your staff that are educating you? Are you going places to read? Are there any names specifically that you might be digging into, listening to podcasts or reading their books or whatever?
I think it kind of depends on in what realm you're talking about. I think that for me personally, it's a combination of using the resources that we have on staff with the Diamondbacks, you know, and doing my own digging on some con ed type stuff, and for movement mobility type stuff, where maybe we hook a guy up to a heart rate monitor and we're looking to live, you know, in the aerobic zone, cardiac output to generate some recovery, DNS, FRC, all those types of things. I think that we've all been exposed to, we use a lot of the stuff from Altus, recovery, cardio, and running mechanic type stuff, whether it be used as part of a warm-up or a regen session. Polar heart rate monitors, I think, can be useful if you understand heart rate zones and you can cater it specifically, if you have the time to cater that type of thing specifically to maybe a starting pitcher, for example. In a lot of scenarios, that's not appropriate. And I think just easy no-brainers to throw in there supplement-wise. We use tart cherry juice and glutamine primarily after, like, when a starter comes off the mound, just in an effort to reduce inflammation and increase melatonin production. It's an easy, just he kind of comes in before we get his arm care or whatever it may be. He just kind of pounds that. And then we have a Headspace meditation app that we encourage our guys to download if they're into that type of thing. So I think ultimately it kind of depends on where you're looking, because I think that they're kind of broken down. Maybe the big three are in a different category than maybe active recovery or that type of thing. So we do have some resources, thankfully. I'm very fortunate for that. So I don't know if you guys have any ideas or any guidance on anything additional.
For me, like, one of the big books that I've read is the Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. I think he was on Joe Rogan's podcast as well. And that kind of just got me into digging a little deeper about sleep. Supplement wise, you know, I'm honestly a minimalist with supplements. I like the idea of eating food, but just manipulating meals around pregame and postgame, working with our nutritionist on, if you give them this certain type of meal, it'll kind of prompt them to get closer to sleeping after the game. Versus this kind of meal pregame is good for them for fuel. So even nutrition wise, you can manipulate things. I'm trying to think who else. I do a lot of the Altus stuff, and one of our guys on staff is real big on, like, running mechanics. And one of the things that, you know, comes out of that is the more efficiently that you move, the less energy you're expending, the less recovery you might need. So that's also something to look into in terms of the Altus stuff. I haven't brought it up yet, and I was hoping we would dive into it. Nobody's brought up, like, soft tissue stuff. For me, I am not a huge fan of foam rollers, and you guys can wear me out on that one as much as you want. I am a fan of soft tissue work and soft tissue manipulation. For me, like, even rolling around on a PVC pipe or a rumble roller is better than a foam roller. Personally, for myself, I like using a barbell for all of my stuff, trying to get into, like, body tempering, things like that. But the foam roller just doesn't really do it for me. I see guys kind of just aimlessly rolling around on a foam roller, talking or on their phone. Like, that isn't like directed, like, actual focused work for me. And for me, it kind of falls into eyewash. Now, if you're using it for the purposes and you're focused, and you're actually trying to get some soft tissue out of it, then I'd probably recommend, like, hey, maybe use this PVC pipe instead of this soft piece of black foam. I don't know if that's actually going to do what you're thinking it's doing. But at the same time, if a guy has a good routine and it's part of his routine and his recovery work, and he thinks it works for him, I mean, maybe I'm wrong to tell him that he's wrong. You know what I mean? So I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that or any of the other continuing ed stuff, but that's definitely one that kind of, you know, sparks some debate. So if you guys got thoughts on it, I'm definitely down to hear what you say. And you can tell me I'm wrong. I really don't give a shit.
Nah, man, I think, I don't know. I think a lot of the stuff in the previous conversations that we've had seem to be that, like, fall in line. It's funny that you brought up, like, the body tempering, because that's where I think, like, is one of the biggest resources that are available for recovery modalities is looking at power lifters and Olympic weightlifters, because they've been doing it a long time, and the stress and the strain that they put on their bodies daily, they're probably, like, in my opinion, like, the most experimental and also the most open to, like, modalities when it comes to just any type of athlete. That, like, a lot of the stuff that is being promoted within what they do, like, focuses on, like, their aerobic work, whether it's sled towing, low intensity walking, the body tempering, things like that. That's like right up the alley of like stuff that like you can push onto guys and it's going to get them moving. I go a little bit further where it's like, I'm not a fan of foam rolling or just like any type of like tissue work like that in general. That's just me. I would rather a guy, push a guy towards like some type of like active mobility, such as like what Logan brought up, the FRC stuff, in order to like make guys aware of what their tissue feels like, but also like their range of motion abilities, both active and passive. I just think that's going to be more bang for their buck versus like you said, versus just like laying down on something and then thinking that they're getting something out of it. And then for me, like I kind of just let guys do their thing, because anybody and everybody is putting stuff out there right now on social media. So, you know, some guys are going to, there's some people out there that are overreaching on, you know, what they actually have knowledge of or what they should be putting out there, in terms of advice or just things like that. But it at least gets the conversation going. You know, if a guy comes up to me and is showing me this Instagram account of just like, yo, dude, like, check this out. Should I be doing this? Like, I'm not going to tell him straight up right there, like, this guy's an idiot. I have no idea why you're following him. It's at least promoting a conversation where he's just like, okay, he's seeking out advice. Like, I'll let him experiment with this as long as it's like doing no harm. And then from there you can start to try to like, lead him on the right path. One of the biggest ones I promote is just doing yoga, just because, especially in the off season, I'm terrible about it and I push guys towards it. So I know that those guys are not staying on top of their mobility most of the guys aren't staying on top of their mobility as best as they should be. So if I can get them to show up to yoga, like one, they're going to like who they're around when it comes to the yoga classes. And two, like it's another thing where just like now they're like, they come up, it's like, yo, like I feel better when like I'm focusing on my breathing. It's just like, bam, like there's another thing that you hit with that too.
Yeah. And small disclaimer for me, like I'm saying I prefer like a barbell or a PVC versus like a foam roller, but anybody who's been around me long enough knows that I think I roll out like maybe once every 6 months with a barbell. So it's not like if I have to pick the lesser of two evils for an athlete, I would prefer the PVC or the rumble roller versus the foam roller. But I'm 100% in agreement with you. Like, movement is the medicine. Like, motion is the lotion, whatever cliche you want to throw in there. Like, for me, the active stuff is much, much better bang for their buck, like you said. So, Travis, Logan, I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that, but I'm Danny and I seem to be on the same page at least. So maybe we're both crazy.
I agree. I absolutely despise foam rolling. I'll see a guy laying on a foam roller and I'll grab a barbell, or we have the boom sticks and stuff. I'm like, give this a try. And they're like, they'll immediately be like, this is heavy, this hurts. I'm just like, shut up and just get it 30 seconds. Cause like I tell guys, like, you're going to spend 15 minutes foam rolling. And if you're going to do tissue work, use this barbell or boom stick for 5 minutes and it's going to cut your time in half and you're going to feel better. You know, a lot of times, like, I'll approach it of, how do you feel? Do you feel better? And if they're like, yeah, I'm like, okay, I've won, you know. Or if they're like, no, I really don't feel better. Okay, let's try something else. So that's kind of like how I'll attack introducing some new things to guys, of just be like, how do you feel? You know, do you feel a difference? Okay, no. All right, let's change this or try something else. You know, you guys hit on it. Like, the active recovery is huge. You know, I'm not partial to one thing. You know, I like pairing the tempering with some tissue work. And then let's move into some active recovery of, you know, guys who walk in the clubhouse, they woke up 30 minutes ago. It's like, okay, let's do some tissue work, but then let's get your ass up and get moving, because you got to be in the cage in 30 minutes. You know, you run in those situations of guys running, show up, and they got 30 minutes to get ready for their baseball activity. It's like, what can we do as quickly as possible to get you ready to go, you know? And Danny touched on, I think the yoga and Pilates is something I've started to get into a little more, and educating myself a little more. You know, as Chris knows, I do powerlifting, not the biggest yoga guy myself. So I've tried to start educating myself. We offer yoga in season a couple times a week to our guys. So just trying to get my head around that and push guys towards that. And one thing I've tried this off season, if we've introduced, is Pilates. And I've actually found some success with it myself. So trying to pull some things out of the Pilates that have worked for me and introduce them to some guys. And one big thing that I've kind of fell onto education wise, our staff. Luckily for us, we have three or four guys that have been in pro ball for 10 plus years and kind of just falling on them of what have you done in the past? You know, what's worked in this situation? Or if you got a guy in a certain situation, you don't know what to do and you've tried everything, just kind of relying on them to help you out in situations like that.
Yeah, the powerlifter thing, like I said, I like to try things. And Danny, you had touched on it, like powerlifters, Olympic lifters, they have to put their bodies through so much stress that they have no choice but to experiment with things. And sometimes they have to go when they don't feel great, but it's just so much easier when you do feel great. So you're like, I really, really need to do my movement stuff. I really need to do whatever it is to get myself ready. And so I think for us, that's a huge advantage, like just trying things out and experimenting. And I mean, I've gone toe to toe with players on just like how much volume their work is in a day versus how much like my lifting, running, movement volume is. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I pound this out every single day and you take 10 swings during batting practice. Like my volume is pretty high. And they're like, yeah, but, and I'm like, during the game, you sit most of it. And then you hit maybe 4 at-bats, 5 at-bats in a game. I ran 300 yard shuttles this morning or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like we like to go back and forth with it, but at the end of the day, like the experience that we get in our own programs, I mean, we can only use that for our benefit to help the athletes for sure.
I'm with you guys on the foam roller thing. I think that it is pretty useless. I do think that it can be a tool to help guys develop a routine if there is a lack thereof. It can be something where, you know, a lot of the times it's a place filler. We don't want to create soft tissue monsters by any means. Through work that either ourselves, you know, that we're doing as a staff, a lot of our strength conditioning coaches are also LMTs, but you know, whether it be workload on the athletic training side or the strength conditioning side, we don't want to create a situation where everyone comes in and asks for soft tissue work. But I do think a lot of the more localized specific work is done by a member of the staff, or encouraging guys to do stuff with a lacrosse ball or with a barbell, something that may have a little bit more of an impact than a soft foam roller, like Chris mentioned. Do you guys have any of your guys, I guess as an organization or individually, use any kind of wearable tech, like a Whoop band and an Aura ring, or any HRV monitors, any of that type of thing, or not really?
We had used Whoop. What year was that? 2016 or 17? They were doing like a baseball, kind of like dry run with it, where guys didn't wear it in games, but we had them available at each affiliate, and that was universal throughout baseball. Some organizations accepted to do it, some didn't, and it was like a free trial run, and just kind of working through some of the issues. This was when Whoop was kind of first coming out, and it was good. I actually wore one myself, but what it was kind of telling me was what I was figuring out anyways with my programming, in terms of like, all right, today's going to be a shitty lift and I need to focus on my recovery. All right, tomorrow's a light day. Like all my numbers with the Whoop kind of matched up with what I was expecting with my own lifting as well. Like big picture for me was just, we can get guys in touch with their bodies, with their routines. That stuff just kind of reinforces what we've been doing anyways. So it becomes a little redundant if it's not in your budget or you just don't have the capabilities to do it. Now, if you have the money and you want to invest in it, like by all means, it's probably just going to help you. It's one of those tools. Like you said, if you have more tools, more availability, there's more ways to show athletes like, hey, this was a good night's sleep, this wasn't a good night's sleep. But for me, like I said, the biggest thing is if I could just get guys in a good routine for themselves, And get them in touch with their bodies and like how they're feeling on specific days. Like it kind of just reinforced what I was feeling with my own programming anyways when I wore it. But some guys don't have that ability to be in touch with themselves or how they think they feel versus how they really feel, or, you know, their mental state might not match their physical state. Like for that purpose, the Whoop for me anyways, when I was kind of using it with some of our guys, like that was where I saw the benefit, was just kind of connecting some dots for guys that were kind of missing some info in their routines and opening conversations like we talked about earlier. Like all that tech does is, I mean, the biggest thing is just opens conversations for us. So I don't know if you guys have used anything else. I haven't been around too much like heart rate monitoring stuff or HRV or anything like that, other than just, like I said, using the Whoop band with our guys.
We don't do any heart rate monitoring. The only thing we do have a couple of them at each affiliate are readiness bands. They're just sleep monitoring bands. We just keep a couple at the affiliates in case we do have guys that are trending down with their sleep over time, comparing that with the wellness journals and having conversations with guys if they're struggling with sleep. We'll hand them the band and stuff, and it comes with the app, and it just makes guys aware of how they slept, you know, what was their quality of sleep, and just make changes to their habits based off that. That's really the only thing, you know, it's not really tech, but we do wellness journals, but it just kind of backs up to, like you said, Chris, of those conversations you have with the players already. And then you check the, you know, the data and you're like, okay, we were spot on. Like we've already made those changes and stuff, is kind of what I found, is just having those good conversations with guys.
Can't really speak on the tech, and there's not much that like I'll add to the conversation that you guys have already spoken about. But when it comes to that, it's mostly, like you said, it's sort of like just like a feedback process of just like, whatever information we've been able to get, it's been to sort of just objectify, what we're doing, and improving upon the process. Some of the just like main things, have been, just subjective monitoring. A lot of it is actually based around conversations with the guys, daily, to kind of just get a rating of what they feel. But yeah, it's mostly been something to, as all of you guys have kind of touched on, it is just to make sure like if what we're doing is right for the individual and from a process of the organization.
Gotcha. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming on. We've been chatting either on or off the camera here for over an hour. If people were not listening or fell asleep or whatever it was, they zoned out, what takeaways do you want them to leave this conversation with?
I would just say that we've kind of hammered home the big three of sleep, hydration, and nutrition. I think everything that we do is off of that. That is the base for everything, and whatever intervention that we try to implement with specific guys or a group of guys should be built off of that. I think it would be silly to try to do anything to cut those things out and try to, you know, routinely find ways around those big three. And I think if you can hammer that home for the majority of our guys, it's going to do wonders. And I think that we'll start to see as we progress as a sport as well. And everyone becomes smarter and more educated on all this types of stuff. Schedules will allow for better travel, and maybe we won't have overnight bus trips and games all over the place and doubleheaders out the wazoo and all this stuff, you know? So maybe it'll make it easier to adjust, or maybe not, who knows? We'll just do the best we can. So that's all I got.
No, I think Logan said it right. You know, the big three, you know, we hammered home. And, you know, I think not forgetting the overall goal is to keep our players on the field and performing at their highest level. So, you know, introducing any, you know, recovery modality that you need to based off your own situation is, you know, there's not one right way to do it. You know, we've talked about how hard our job can be, you know, being able to adapt to situations of players where you're at is, you know, a big key in what our conversation's been.
Yeah, 100%. I think you know, the 3 points, I kind of took one from each of you guys, is where, you know, like Travis said, within this profession, especially for minor league baseball, is just going to be, you know, be creative. Understand that the ideal situation is a pipe dream. And so, like, just understanding what you have, what your limitations are, and try and doing the best around that is going to be the best thing at the end of the day. Chris, you mentioned, you know, what's best today might not be the best thing in the long run, but it's about, you know, the preparation of the athlete and the individual for that situation. And something that hit home with me was what Logan mentioned, is just we're stress managers. I think a lot of people take that to being we're stress reducers. I don't think that should be the case at all. It's understanding, like, we're managing stress. It's some days are going to be high, and that's going to be the best thing in the long run. And then from there is just building off of all that, you know, to help prepare these guys not only to recover better, but to perform their best that they can in one day and also in their whole career.
Right on. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll be in touch soon. Stay safe, and try not to go outside too much at this point in time, right?
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for having us on. I appreciate it. Travis and Danny, it was nice seeing you guys.
Thanks, Chris. It was good meeting you guys.
Absolutely. Take care, guys. Thanks, Chris.
All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Travis, Logan, and Danny. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. I hope we made it perfectly clear throughout how important recovery is, especially in the game of professional baseball. 3 things that I took from the guys in this episode: take care of sleep, hydration, and nutrition first. Take the time to educate your players on the value of recovery and good habits. And understand your limitations and learn how to use what you have. One final note before we sign off: remember, the PBSCCS is having a virtual clinic on October 7th, and you can sign up on the NSCA website. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.